And it goes. All right, this is Pure Decking for, I don't know what to say, April 5th, 2018, I think, maybe. This is a show about stuff that interests me, like information security, pointing out just how rigged the game is. And tonight we realized if you press the super key control and C, Windows turns black and white. I did not know this. It's like, oh God, what did I do to my video card?
The video card had a stroke.
What's going on? I have not been having much luck with my Windows boxes tonight, so believe me, I'm actually my server was down too, so I was not in the mood for yet another problem. I'm Morps, and tonight we have Suave the potato. What are you drinking?
I went and checked the liquor cabinet, and I was out of pretty much everything, so I just took a shot of schnapps, and now I'm drinking water.
Okay, well, you got something down at least. You added your homemade wine or trash wine or whatever it was you were making?
No, I just didn't want to open a bottle.
I've actually got a batch of mead going right now that I need to remember to check before this weekend. I was hoping to bottle it, but
yeah, I've got the entire bottom of my fridge thawing apples right now. I'm going to make some cider.
Oh, nice. You and I need to talk. I wouldn't mind knowing how to make cider, so I might try that next.
Well, you know, I say cider, but really I just mean apple wine.
No. I was going to say, figured I could save myself the Google search, but no. Okay, I got you.
From what I understand with cider, it's pretty much just apple juice and yeast. You don't add sugar. You have a lower alcohol percentage, and you cap it before it's done fermenting, so you get carbonation.
Oh, well, shit. I've got a bottle of that where I was experimenting a couple of months ago, still left in the fridge I've never opened. So that's probably pretty good by now. It's been mellowing for months.
Yeah.
And Madman. Madman, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking a cold snap.
Cool. So... yeah, shit, dude. It has been so obviously I had a power surge or something because power's out when I got home. And at first I thought, well, no show tonight. And then the power came back on. It's like, yay. And then I realized my file server is fucked. And that's a problem because my server is an integral component of how I run the show because I use a couple of different machines, and that's where all the sound effects and the notes and how it gets moved from machine to machine, and it actually records straight onto the file server. So it's like, if that thing's not working, I'm in trouble. So because it is a file server, I'd actually set up the boot partition on a little USB thumb drive, Unraid, if anybody cares. And so because it works quite well. So I was able to take the drive and pop it on another machine and blow back on a fresh copy of Unraid. Well, I say fresh copy. It was the same zip file, so with the exception of my config files, which all looked okay. Basically a backup of the OS, and blew that back on the drive, plopped it back in, and the machine came back to life because it was kernel panicking like a lot. So somehow the flash drive got corrupted initially, but I was able to repair it. So my file server came back up, and it's currently doing a parity check, but that's not going to really be a problem for what we're doing for the show tonight. That's probably going to be running for like 2 days, because that's just how it works. So I get that back up, and then we're looking for show notes, and the damn Windows screen goes black and white. It's like, what do we do? So, yeah, super control and C, or the Windows key, if you don't know what the super key is. Your screen will turn black and white on Windows 10.
Why?
I guess it's an accessibility thing, maybe for the colorblind?
Yeah, but... yeah.
Okay. I have no idea why. I just... it did it.
So. I should go around at work tomorrow. It's my last day in the office, and just go do that to everybody's computer.
Last day in the office? Are you taking a new position?
No, I'm just going part-time. I'm going to be working from home more.
Well, more time for playing Fortnite, if nothing else.
Ooh, I kind of want to do that at work also now.
Go part-time or go do that to every machine to make your support desk hate you?
That to every machine?
Yeah, if your support desk ever figures out that it's you doing it.
There's a computer that I use TeamViewer to get into remotely. That's just going to randomly have black and white screens. It's kind of a community computer. Lots of people use it. Great.
You're a mean person. But now on top of that, Windows Update trashed my banger laptop this morning. I needed to put together a flash drive for something at work. And I thought, oh, I'll just flash this while I, get ready. And so I boot up the laptop, and because the utility I need won't run on a Linux machine, and I haven't tried it under Wine, so I'm like, oh, I'll just boot the Windows partition. I haven't used this in a few months, but what the hell, right? And, Windows Update decides to run in the background. So I go upstairs with this thing running a flashing utility for a little flash drive I needed for work. And I come back downstairs, and it has this big screen on it saying, Windows is currently installing updates. Do not reboot your machine. Son of a bitch. And, I couldn't even get it to go away to see if it finished flashing the drive correctly or not. Spoilers, it did not. And, because the Windows Update thing basically crashed. And, so that computer, if you boot the Windows partition now, blue screens! Thanks, Microsoft, awesome. And fuck you very much. I've about had it with Windows. I mean, I was happy living in multiple worlds and using, treating operating systems just it's a tool. Use the best one for the job, but I've about had it with this shit because the operating system isn't working for you anymore. And I've known this, and I'm like, well, you can clean it up. You can do this other stuff. You can, run the nice Windows 10 cleanup pack and the shutup 10 and NT Lite and. Clean all the stuff out of it. But, every fucking update turns all the privacy settings back on. I noticed on the machine I use for broadcasting, which is a Windows box, but given the software that runs on it doesn't actually need to be, it's just kind of, it was convenient and I didn't feel like resetting it up. It's starting to get the random login wallpapers again, which all that's was turned off. So that just means Microsoft is now pulling a Facebook and resetting it back to defaults whenever it suits them. On your settings.
Awesome.
So, and so I think we're going to be moving, and I've done this before where I just went hardcore, nothing shall be Windows of mine again. And of course that works great until the next time you need it for work, right?
Yeah.
So, we're
always going to need a Windows box, at least for the foreseeable future.
So we're going to be minimizing our Windows usage and exposure as much as possible over the next few months. And I'm just sick of it, man. Of course, Android's not much better. My phone got the latest Android update, so I've been getting weird-ass notifications. Set up your secondary contacts. What the fuck are secondary contacts? So. It's like, I don't know. I haven't even looked up what all this the update crap is on this thing now. So, and of course, all my settings are getting reset again because it's more convenient for the companies if your settings are reset so they can do what the fuck they want. Heaven forbid the machine does what you want it to do. So, as much as Salman gets on my nerves, I'm starting to go maybe he was right about most of this shit. So. And don't get me wrong, man gets on my nerves. So, it's like, okay, well, you can be crazy and still not be wrong. So, I already use quite a bit of Linux. I think we're just going to be expanding on that. Do my best to migrate anything that's currently Windows-based away from it. Or at least wrap up Windows where it belongs in a virtual machine, away from anything important.
Yeah.
So, turn to a good phone OS. PureOS.com. Yeah, okay. Might keep an eye on that. So let's go ahead and, you know, speaking of companies just completely disregarding what people want out of their technology, and it's like, no, it's our computer now. You just happen, you might own it, but it does what we want. Because that's more convenient for our business model. Let's talk about the Facebook business model. This is from NBCNews.com. Facebook users would have to pay to opt out of all Facebook ads, Sheryl Sandberg says. And then this is the part that really got my attention. While Facebook does not sell users' information or give it away, our service depends on your data. How can both of those statements be true? We don't sell it.
It sells your data.
Yeah. It's if you're not selling our data, but you require it for your business model, what are you doing? And so let's just read the article here. Users' data are the life. Shouldn't it be users' data is?
Is.
Yeah.
Well, users NBC. Are, data is. Yeah, no, yeah, data is.
NBC, guys? Really? Users' data are, because that's what the article says, the lifeblood of Facebook, and they want to opt out of all of the platform's data-driven advertising. They would have to pay for it, Sheryl Sandberg, the company's chief operating officer, told NBC News on Thursday. In an interview with Today co-anchor Savannah Guthrie, Sandberg has again acknowledged that the company mishandled the breach that allowed Cambridge Analytica, the data analysis firm that worked for Donald Trump's 2016 presidential campaign, to harvest millions of users' information. More of the interview will air tonight, or air Friday morning on Today. This is definitely the case in 2016 that we were behind and we didn't understand what kind of election or that kind of election interference, Sandberg said. So they're now blaming Facebook for Trump being elected. It's like, yeah, okay. Well, got to have something to blame. Couldn't just be people didn't like Hillary Clinton. Two most disliked candidates in any presidential, in any modern presidential race.
No, I think you were right the first time. I think you can go with any presidential race.
Well, I don't know. People may have really hated Taft. I don't know. So, but and my understanding is that FDR wasn't all that popular his first run around. I know he got reelected like four times, but apparently his first round he wasn't terribly popular. Where was it? Sandberg, okay, I already read that part. It is definitely the case in 2016. Oh, I already read that. We thought that the data had been deleted, and you're right, we should have checked, she said. Sandberg detailed some of the steps Facebook is taking to let users opt out of sharing some, but not all of their data, like choosing not to hear from specific advertisers. Sandberg said Facebook doesn't sell or give away its users' information, even though our service depends on your data. So we don't have an opt-out at the highest level, she acknowledged. That would be a paid product. The interview is one of several Sandberg gave on Thursday, explaining how the Cambridge Analytica breach took place and taking responsibility for the handling of company's users' data, which the company has said was improperly shared. We were given assurances by them years ago that they deleted the data, she said of Cambridge Analytica on PBS NewsHour. We should have followed up. That's on us. We're trying to do a forensics audit and figure out what they have. In a separate interview with Bloomberg TV, Sandberg said the company was also systematically looking for all the ways Facebook data is used. We are going to find other things, she warned. So,
one, I don't think it's a breach. They gave Cambridge Analytica access. Cambridge Analytica said what they wanted the access for. And whenever you're doing any types of studies like the ones they were doing, or studies at all, you can't delete the source material. That's how you determine whether or not a study has validity. Look at their methods and their source material and see if the answers they came up with make logical sense.
Well,
to be fair, it isn't Facebook who's selling your data. Yeah, it's like they are an advertising company. They just want to be able to target advertisements at certain groups. And like, I seem to remember reading an article, and somebody correct me if I'm wrong here, but I thought somebody had like ran some sort of like questionnaire or stupid test or something like that on Facebook. And that's where they got the initial like 40 million account.
It is. And
information. And it wasn't even Cambridge who was running that quiz. I thought it was somebody who sold that data to Cambridge.
So my understanding with Cambridge was that they went to Facebook directly and asked for access to some of the data because they were doing research projects. Whereas, say, Obama, his campaign back in 2008, or was it the 2010? No, I think it was the 2008 campaign. They put a questionnaire on Facebook. And because at the time, Facebook didn't just give you the people who agreed to it, but it also gave you the contacts of all the people who agreed to it. So anyone who was friends with anybody who filled out the form also got their data pulled in the form. Mm-hmm. So the Obama campaign was bragging that they got something like 3/4 of all Facebook accounts at the time of his first election. So
I'm sure.
You know, it's interesting. Honestly, that everybody's really upset because it was Trump, but I think that's more politics than anything.
It's the last three election cycles.
It's my understanding that it was because it wasn't a domestic business, wasn't it? Like, isn't that where there's some sort of hazy legal legalities?
Well, it's because instead of getting it through a Facebook app like most campaigns have done, they actually got the data straight from Facebook, potentially without users' permission. But apparently the EULA of Facebook says, nope, you agree to this when you make a Facebook account.
Yeah.
So, of course, I'm pretty sure that same EULA probably says...
Anybody who's shocked that their Facebook data was used by a marketing company, you should probably
read up Facebook
on stuff a little bit more.
Yeah. Well, and two... I'm sure that Facebook EULA says that they can amend it at any time to say whatever the hell they want. And I don't know what the legalese for we can say whatever the hell we want is, but I'm sure it's in there. And which means, you know, they could go amend that EULA tomorrow. And if you don't immediately opt out and delete your Facebook account, that they could just, you know, give it away or sell it. So if their stock is really tanking as bad as a lot of people have been talking about, I could see them amending it to start selling off the data so they could sell the brand and, pull corporate shenanigans like Google did with incorporating into Alphabet.
With an amendment like that, you have to re-sign the EULA.
Well, even
that's
so.
Why, whenever Blizzard did all those Warcraft updates at the end of them, you still had to scroll down to the end and hit, I accept, I'm still giving you fucking money, I want to play the damn game, leave me the hell alone.
Okay, fair enough. You're expecting Facebook to abide by that. I'd be surprised. Apparently, my IRC connection is going in and out, which is annoying. I don't see anything else connecting and disconnecting. It's just IRC, so maybe Freenode's having problems tonight. Yeah, because I just got kicked out of the IRC. Are you guys still in the IRC?
Nope. Looking for your host name. Checking in. Nope.
And back in. It says I'm already logged in. So... weird. Okay, yeah, IRC is being bitchy tonight. On top of everything else, just what I need for my temperament. We are going to get so
But it's not on your
drunk.
Side, it's on their side because it's hitting me too.
Yeah, it's a server. It's Freenode's having problems tonight, I think. That's annoying. So, while we were talking about the Facebook thing, you found this scammers are abusing Facebook's phone number search, apparently. This is from the BBC.
Oh, yeah.
What do you want? You want to talk it?
Oh, you can introduce it if you want.
All right. Well, thanks for letting me introduce it on my own show.
You're welcome. I figured I'll give you some authority.
Oh, okay.
I've been running everything.
On Wednesday, the firm said malicious actors had been harvesting profiles for years by abusing the search tool. It said anybody could have not changed their privacy settings after adding their phone number, or anybody that had not changed their privacy settings after adding their phone number should assume their information has been harvested. Oh, I missed a line. Facebook was warned by security researchers that attackers could abuse its phone number and email search facility to harvest people's data. So, and the way Facebook pulls data in, it wouldn't be surprising. The way Facebook pulls data in and resets your settings all the damn time, or as I accused Microsoft of earlier, of, you know, pulling a Facebook and just resetting you back to public all the fucking time. Yeah. So just assume that if your phone number is in Facebook, somebody's managed to associate with your email address.
Not just your email address. They'll get your name and contact info.
Nice.
They're searching Facebook to find out who you are.
Until Wednesday, Facebook let people search for friends' profiles by typing in a phone number or email address. But it said scammers had abused the facility and used it to link phone numbers and emails to people's names and profile information. An attacker could type in any phone number, even one they had made up by guessing, and link it to a person's profile. This would also reveal their name, location, and other profile information. By linking a phone number to personal details, the scammer could telephone the victim and address them by name, pretend to be from a bank or other organization. So, you know, you could facilitate social engineering attacks here. This is known as enumeration, going through all the iterations of a phone number. Security researcher Ken Mumro from Pentest Partners said, okay, yeah. If you wanted to scam somebody, you had to route to find all their details and know their name. A fantastic setup for a scam. Facebook said it has put measures in place to limit how often people could search, but the measures were not able to prevent malicious actors who cycled through hundreds of thousands of different IP addresses, Mark Zuckerberg explained. An IP address can be used to identify an individual computer using the internet, but attackers could change theirs frequently to avoid detection. Yep, anybody with a VPN or, you know, IP config switch release, IP config switch renew on a Windows box, IF config. Actually, no. You got to do IF up and down on most Linux boxes or rerun the DH client. Although if you script it out to change your MAC address and then release and renew, that way you could really ensure you get a new IP. Really easy to bounce your IPs around, especially if you go through like an Amazon host or something where you can just request a new one all the damn time, go through different load balancers. I'm actually surprised more cloud servicers aren't getting blocked by, I guess you'd have a hard time doing that, but I'd expect most of these cloud services, especially the cheaper ones, to just, you know, flat out be blocked by a lot of social networks, email systems and shit like that, because it'd be so easy to spin up, you know, steal a credit card, go spin up 100 email or 100 different IPs, you know, send out all your crap, then just disappear. And, you know, somebody gets a $50 Amazon credit card bill and doesn't even know what it's for. You know, it's a small enough amount, they may not even care. So, yeah, if you don't know what Amazon is and you start seeing it on your credit bill, that means somebody stole your credit card. So, or AWS, I should say.
Thank you.
I don't remember buying... What is AWS services? I don't remember buying that from Amazon. Yeah. Anyways. Although enough people spend money on Amazon, they may not even notice it. They may just think, you know, I ordered something. I don't remember what. Must have been a drunk buy again. Although now that I think about it, that's how we got galaxy15radio.com. So... Yeah.
The gift that keeps on giving.
So, apparently, this was reported all the way back in August of 2015. They're only just now fixing it, probably because of all the noise around Facebook and people deleting their accounts. So.
Has their user base actually suffered? I mean, I know their stock price has taken a bit of a hit, but that doesn't matter. Stocks go up and down.
Yeah.
If their user base isn't taking a hit, then they'll come back.
There is an article. There's a lot of people calling for April 9th to be like your delete your Facebook account day. So, and there have been a lot of high-profile people deleting their Facebook accounts.
Okay. If people are actually deleting it and leaving, then that's something. But the whole delete and then you're back on it, you didn't delete
it. Well, it wouldn't surprise me if there were a lot of people who were deleting their Facebook accounts following a trend, because I honestly assume most people do not have Facebook accounts because they like using Facebook. You know,
yeah.
I don't have a Facebook account because I have any particular love of the platform. I have a Facebook account because I have a whole bunch of family that uses Facebook, and I occasionally get cajoled into, you know, logging in and looking at something or posting something or... you know, I assume that's what the majority of people on Facebook who actually are real people and not bots or you know, other bullshit.
I don't know. I know people that have their heads stuck in Facebook because that's their news feed, and it's also instant chat with most of their friends.
Like, to me, because everybody's on cell phones now, Facebook has basically replaced the Yellow Pages. You know, if you want to look up an old friend or get into contact with somebody who you don't have contact information for, Facebook is generally how you do it now.
Do you have a Facebook account, Swav?
Yeah.
Why?
I haven't logged in the last 6 months because it's in case somebody wants to get a hold of me who doesn't have my contact info.
So, I'm just saying, I feel like most people have Facebook accounts because they're kind of, well, I better have an account on there in case somebody's trying to get a hold of me, or, well, my family wants me to link up on there, or you know, it's somebody running a small-time business and they're using it for advertising. I feel like it's one of those things where it's like nobody really wants to be on Facebook, but they feel like they have to be on Facebook.
Yeah,
sort of like MySpace was back in the day, or AOL Messenger.
My mom, for example, like, she doesn't spend a huge amount of time, but she goes and checks her wall and scrolls through and reads all the stuff and watches random videos and stuff like that. So there's definitely people who do that.
Well, my grandmother routinely berates me for not posting things on Facebook so she can see them.
Yeah.
Like, I'll send pictures around on people's phones and stuff. And she's like, well, why don't you just post that on Facebook? Because I don't want to link Facebook to this phone. Well, you should just do that. I don't want to. So I feel like a lot of people will probably on Facebook just because they're cajoled into it.
Yeah.
Cycross is saying that apparently cam girls have been banned from Twitter and Instagram, so Mastodon seeing a massive uptick. So you might see people moving there from Facebook as well. So I don't know. You're right. I mean, if the stock price, if not that many people are actually deleting their accounts, you're right. The stock price will eventually come back, which means now might just be a sale.
Yeah, it's sale on Facebook stock.
But, you know, like, as far as I understand it, like, the majority of Facebook's ads are still displayed on their platform. Like, they still want eyes on your timeline or whatever.
Oh, sure.
So, like, if everybody who's using it just has an account just in case and doesn't really actively use the platform, it's still going to hurt them. So I think there's still enough people who are actually using it. And I think it's that subgroup of users who they'd have to worry about canceling their accounts.
Well, and not only that, but a lot of security people will tell you that you should go ahead and set up an Instagram, a Facebook, a Twitter, not because you actually want to use these services, just to prevent somebody else from setting one up in your name for you.
Yeah.
Not that it really matters, because all they'll do is put some random numbers at the end and still pretend to be you. But, you know, if somebody has your name at Facebook and they're, you know, have your picture and pretending to be you, it can be really hard to prove that it's fake, especially if they're posting, I don't know, politics that you completely disagree with or something like that. Because people have lost their jobs over shit, and, like, in the UK, people get arrested for posting the wrong shit on Twitter. Like, oh, that's hate speech, you know. Can't call
it
a truck
of
peace.
Yeah, you can't teach a pug to zig heil.
Yeah. So I'm just thinking that'd be a hell of a scam, of a blackmail scam. It's like, I've got your Facebook. I'm going to be posting Nazi paraphernalia and, you know, posting a pug doing zig heil unless you send me, you know, a Bitcoin. Well, Bitcoin's gone down. Two Bitcoins. Yeah, I hope everybody got I hope nobody got hit too hard with the crypto crash. Although it's still up from where it was at the beginning of last year, so.
Like, pretty much every time there's a crash.
Well, it hasn't recovered yet, though. It's still way down.
The last time it crashed, it took like 2 years, didn't it?
Did it?
Yeah, I think it took a while.
I still wish we had all bought into it back when it was like $4 or $5, back when you were first, you know, telling us all to get into it.
Oh, I was like all gung-ho, and I'm like, oh, I should get into it. And I looked into getting into it, and it was just like, you basically had to send a money order to a random internet person.
Yeah.
And trust that they would not screw you over. I'm like, maybe not. Fuck.
Yeah, that's why I never got into it early. It's just like, this looks squirrely as fuck.
Yeah.
It's like, go buy a green pack and then call us and email us the number and then we'll transfer the Bitcoin. Wait, what? This sounds like a scam.
This is exactly what scammers do.
It was actually. That's why I was. That's why, you know, it's like, you know what? Let me get some of those mining things and just play with it. And I wish I'd hung on to it better than I did, but, you know, hey, whatever. So,
yeah.
You know, I wasn't really interested in it for monetary value because it wasn't really worth anything at the time. It's like, no, I want to play with the technology. But
yeah, Cycros, I think your coworkers are more the rule than the exception. Because outside of my close group, and it's not even all of my close group, it's mainly outside of Morps. People I know that do Facebook actually do Facebook.
Outside of Morps. I'm a classification.
Yes, you're a classification. Now, I will admit, it's varying degrees of use on Facebook. Like my siblings, daily, usually hourly on Facebook. I know some other people, they check it when they get home, 30, 40 minutes, and it's not, they have to, it's they want it, that's how they get a lot of their news feeds. They're just checking it for that.
Well, okay, but I think, how many people, okay, Facebook got blown up tomorrow, and now there's, what do you want to call it, butt book, instead of Facebook, now it's butt book. But, you know, other than that, it was exactly the same, and everybody just migrated to that one. Do you think anybody would really care?
It was Facebook and something else? No. No one would care. It's like the same thing when people go from cable to satellite. They're getting the same service. It's just something else.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like when everybody moved off MySpace onto Facebook. I mean, it's just...
And MySpace was doing the stuff Facebook is doing.
I don't think it's that there's any real brand loyalty. I think it's just inertia. Yep. Although I'm pretty sure that's what Microsoft counts on nowadays, too. So,
Yeah, that's true, too. Although, I got to say, I miss Tom.
You miss Tom? Was Tom your friend?
He was.
He was your friend. Whatever happened to Tom? Is he, like, dead?
No, he's, like, independently wealthy and traveling around the world.
Good for him.
He's got a wicked Instagram account, apparently, with lots of amazing photos.
Good for him. All right, let's move on to stories here. I've been beating up Facebook for half an hour now. First one is from Ars Technica, and let's see, Cycros sent me this, I believe. Yeah, that's what it says in the notes, that Cycros sent me this. I think he sent it to me on Reddit. So I am Morps on Reddit, M-O-R-P-S. Easy enough. And if you want to send me feedback that way, it's a good way to do it. And, oh, he found it. MySpace Tom is on Instagram. This ought to be classic. It's the same picture, too. I wonder if it's him or if it's just, you know, somebody
I'm
set
sure
up a troll account.
It's just some random, like, college photo. Like, it's just, yeah.
That was a video. That was not a... A lot of chicks in bikinis on this Instagram. A lot of waterfalls. So, cool. Anyways, feds, there are hostile stingrays in D.C., but we don't know how to find them. Federal government has formally acknowledged for the first time that it has located, suspected, and unauthorized cell site simulators in various parts of Washington, D.C. The revelation, which was reported for the first time on Tuesday by the Associated Press, was described in a letter recently released from the Department of Homeland Security, the offices of Senator Ron Wyden. Overall, DHS's National Protection and Programs Director believes the malicious use of IMSI catchers is a real and growing risk, wrote Christopher Krebs, DHS's acting undersecretary, in a March 26, 2018 letter to Wyden. The letter and attached questionnaire say that DHS has not determined who is operating the simulators, how many have found, or where they are located. DHS also said that NPPD is not aware of any current DHS technical capability to detect IMSI catchers. The agency did not explain precisely how it was able to observe anomalous activity that appears to be consistent with cell site simulators. The devices, which are also known as stingrays or IMSI catchers, are commonly used by domestic law enforcement nationwide to locate a particular phone. Sometimes they're also used to intercept text messages and phone calls. Stingrays act as a fake cell phone tower and effectively trick a cell phone into transmitting to it, which gives up the phone's location. Given that cell site simulators have been used for years at home, it would be naive to think that malevolent actors, including criminals and foreign governments, would not attempt to set up stingrays in major American cities, particularly in the capital. DHS's answers also say that the agency is aware of the use of stingrays in other U.S. cities, though it did not name them. NPPD is aware of anomalous activity outside the National Capital Region, and it appears to be consistent with IMSI captures. Krebs also wrote, NPPD has not validated or attributed this activity to specific entities or devices. However, NPPD has shared this information with federal partners. In 2015, various federal law enforcement agencies, including the FBI, said that in most circumstances, they will require a warrant when they use the stingray. In other news, they don't always need the warrant. Some states also impose similar regulations. 2014, Federal Communications Commission began a task force into the illicit use of stingrays in America, but the investigation doesn't appear to have produced any public records or taken any meaningful actions. Neither FCC or DHS immediately responded to ours request for comment. Spell my name right. I've been drinking. M-O-R-P-S-E. What did I say? He said I spelled my name wrong earlier. What did I say?
I assumed you knew how to spell it, so I wasn't paying close attention to when you were spelling your name.
Whatever. So, and when Psychro sent me this article, he had attached in the comment, how can they not find these things? Can't you triangulate them? And probably, you probably can, but you have to remember how much cell phone traffic is in an area at a given time, right? So unless you have a handful of particular devices hitting... Oh, I left the E off. Okay, well, I've been drinking. That's my excuse. I'm sticking with it.
Don't cell phones broadcast their IMEI?
IMEI number? Yeah, they do. But
yeah,
that's their identifier.
You can have a passive listener and identify their IMEI. Like, even if you're not actively, like, capturing, like, phone calls, it would still be useful, because if you can identify the IMEI of a certain individual, passively track them, you're not transmitting anything.
That's actually what people used to do back in the analog days for cell phones, you know, the original brick cell phones before they went digital.
Right.
Because there was no encryption on them then. You could pluck the IMEI number out of thin air. And in fact, that was one of the reasons to get some of the old Nokia phones, because you could throw them in a debug mode and you didn't even need specialized equipment. You could just do it with a fucking phone. And, of course, you needed a serial cable, but still, the right phone and a serial cable, and you could totally just sit there and capture the things all day long. And that's how you would clone cell phones, is you would capture the IMEI number and just program it into another phone. And, but modern, like CDMA, GSM, they're digital signals, and they have some levels of encryption. And I'm not going to say it's good encryption, but they are at least encrypted.
Right,
and
but are they actually encrypting the IMEI, like,
mm-hmm.
that broadcast?
The whole connection.
I thought they actually, like, only encrypted, like, once a connection was made.
I think the initial connection to the cell site might be in the clear, but I don't think that broadcasts the IMEI number, because that's used for identification.
Okay.
And that was a big problem. That'd be a really bad design if it broadcast that in the clear still.
Yeah,
but,
I guess
that
makes sense.
Brain fart. Where was I? Right, why they can't locate these things. So most stingrays are about the size of a suitcase, and they don't have to be in continuous operation. So these things could be on trucks. These things could be... I was joking earlier about you wanted to screw with somebody, throw it on the top of an elevator, but an elevator shaft would probably block the cell phone signal pretty effectively. So, you know, because it'd be moving up and down. But they also don't necessarily have to be running all the time. They might only be running at certain hours of the day. So, and apparently, there are instructions out there for building your own. If you're going to be violating all kinds of laws. And that's why I was talking about the encryption not being all that great on GSM and CDMA. It's actually against federal or FTC regulations to attempt to crack the encryption on those protocols. I'm not saying people don't do it. I'm just saying you're not supposed to. it's like DRM. It's technically illegal to attack it. So
the lock on my door doesn't have to be very strong because it's illegal for you to open it anyway unless I tell you to.
Yeah, that's kind of the defense there, isn't it? The real defense that those protocols have is that the equipment to screw with them is a lot more expensive than your standard PC. But with software-defined radio, not as much as it used to be. It used to be several thousand dollars worth of radio equipment if you wanted to fuck with cell phones. I think it's I think it's you know, down into the thousands of dollars, or maybe even less than that, depending on what you're trying to do.
Well, I know you can pick up some cell phone frequencies with like a $30.
Yeah, the little
SDR.
Those can't those SDRs can't transmit though.
No. Yeah, you're looking at a couple hundred bucks if you want to transmit.
Yeah, so the price on those has come way down. So, yeah. But anyways, it's just, you know, I mean, so, okay, so the way you would have to track these things is you would have to identify that the signals are coming from a particular cell site simulator, and as busy as the cell phone radio networks are, that alone could be difficult, and you would need three signals. Well, at least two. Yeah, I'm wrong. You need two to triangulate roughly the position of the third. And given that you're in the middle of, you know, if you're in the middle of downtown DC, you have high rises and shit like that. Trying to triangulate approximately where a signal is means you still could have many, many floors of a building to have to search trying to find something the size of a suitcase.
Oh, yeah. And why go nail it down to one spot? Why don't you just throw it in the back of a car and go drive around?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, you could easily have it on a truck or in a backpack or, you know, whatever. I'm sure there's people who, you know, run them out of a backpack and walk around for a few hours a day just seeing what data they can collect. And then
the reason that they wouldn't stick it in the truck is if you're trying to listen to specific people, and once you get far enough away, their phone's going to jump to the closest tower.
That's true. So, but if you don't want to get caught, that's where you park the truck outside, say, the Capitol building for, you know.
Yeah, just leave your random unmarked truck in front of the Capitol building. It won't be suspicious at all.
Well, you know, you should mark it. Like, put free candy on the side or something.
Oh, no. A Carlos Danger's fan club.
That won't get you in trouble at all. So, but yeah, I the reason they're having such a hard time identifying these things is, one, they probably don't want to disclose how that they know that they're out there, because it means they're watching those frequencies too. But two, that radio spectrum is so busy. Trying to sort out what's real from cell site simulators is probably extraordinarily difficult, because cell phone companies actually go to quite a few lengths to hide real towers. Like, we were out in Arizona a few years ago, and it's like, what is up with that cactus? That thing looks weird. It's fake. Why is there a fake cactus out here? Oh, it's a cell phone tower. Look, I got five bars. So, you know, they pay churches and put them in the steeples. I mean, they do everything they can to hide these things, because you got to have these radios all over the place for cell phones to work right. And, you know, they're ugly, so you don't want them all over the place. But they're not these huge towers. They're only, I don't know, some of these cell phone antennas are only 12, 15 feet tall. They're not huge, and they don't, depending on the area, they don't have to be that high up. So, you know, they're just kind of, they're hidden all over the place. You can get on Google and find search for it. Cycross says they have fake trees in California that pretend to be cell. I wouldn't doubt that in the least, man. I absolutely would not doubt that.
Well, they just use those to hide regular cell towers. I remember them doing that back in like 2000.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, you can do Google image search and probably find amazing amounts of them out there. So, you know, I just assume, I just assume that they're just everywhere. So there's probably so much you know, so much noise on that spectrum trying to sort out one from the other is probably just a real pain in the ass. And when they're triangulating, they probably find as many real towers as they do fake ones. So.
Yeah. Right. I don't know. I think they could weed out the fake ones. They probably have a map of where the real ones are. Like, oh, the one on 9th and Parrish, that's real. The one at the Pizza Hut, though, that might be a bit suspicious.
Except AT&T and Verizon both sell cell phone signal boosters, which that's basically what they are, is a cell site simulator that you hook into your home internet. And because you can just buy them, it's not like there's a master database anywhere of the damn things. So.
Okay, so those would throw up some false positives.
Yeah. So, next article is from CNBC. Massachusetts can move forward with a lawsuit accusing credit reporting firm Equifax of failing to safeguard its databases or provide prompt notice of breach that exposed the personal data of 147 million people, a state court judge has ruled. Suffolk County Superior Court Judge Kenneth Salinger in Boston, in a decision made public on Wednesday, denied a motion by Equifax to dismiss a lawsuit. Massachusetts Attorney General Mara Healy, filed after the breach was disclosed in September. I am not intentionally mispronouncing shit. I've been drinking. Salinger wrote that the lawsuit. I'm also from the South, so, you know, just justifying if I'm mispronouncing names. Salinger wrote that the lawsuit stated a plausible claim that Equifax breached its legal duties to address all reasonably foreseeable risks to its data security and to implement reasonably up-to-date fixes to its software. The lawsuit alleged that Equifax knew or should have known by March 2017 that a serious security vulnerability existed in computer code that the company used in its systems, but failed to patch or upgrade its software to eliminate it. As a result, hackers were able to access its databases and steal personal information, the lawsuit alleged. These allegations state a viable claim for violation of the data security regulation, Salinger wrote. Equifax declined to comment. The lawsuit is one of several legal challenges facing Equifax related to the data breach. It also faces class action lawsuits and investigations by the U.S. Federal Trade Commission and various states' attorney generals. The lawsuit that Healy filed in September is only one by a state attorney general to date, or is the only one by a state attorney general to date. The lawsuit seeks penalties and restitution, as well as an order requiring Equifax to disgorge any profits it obtained during the breach. Oh. Equifax to disgorge, I didn't read this earlier, any profits that it obtained during the breach. How are they defining the length of time of that breach? Because that could be a lot of money. In a statement, Healy, a Democrat, said her office was prepared to make the case in court to protect state residents and prevent future breaches. Today's order confirms that Equifax is not above the law and can be held accountable for violating the rights of Massachusetts customers, consumers, I should say, she said. Equifax in March said it expects costs related to this massive data breach to surge by $275 million this year, suggesting the incident could turn out to be one of the most costly hack in corporate history. Equifax in court paper says that it is continuing to cooperate with the Federal Bureau of Investigation and other law enforcement agencies to investigate the breach and identify the hackers behind it. Now, the reason I am extremely interested in the outcome of this case, this is one of the very few times I've heard of a corporation or of a entity of any case being held accountable for failing to maintain their data systems and getting hacked.
With this lawsuit now, they can justifiably stop cooperating with the FBI, though.
Why do you say that?
Fifth Amendment. If they're going to be held legally liable and they're saying damages from whatever time to whatever time, they no longer have the obligation to incriminate themselves in court.
That's interesting. But I like the idea that you're actually holding a company accountable for not maintaining their systems. And whereas that is a little Big Brotherish, and the government is not a good source for enforcing these kind of regulations, or these kind of controls, you know, where you actually maintain the security of your data, patch your systems, make sure people aren't going to get into it easily. That kind of accountability has not really come up before. They've always, you know, well, that's victim blaming. Well, you don't want to do that. You don't want to do that. But this, you know, it's sort of like, you know, if Toyota puts out a car that explodes, you know, randomly after you've driven it for more than 3,000 miles, they're going to be held accountable for the car exploding. You know, because it's not meeting safety requirements. And I think in this case, if you are holding a lot of personal data, Cycross, I don't know if that's civil or not, because it's coming from a state attorney general.
It can still be civil. They're going for monetary damages to up against pretty much give to the citizens of their state. The only way, the difference between civil and criminal is someone going to prison. They're going after money. It's civil.
Yeah, so I don't honestly know. Not a lawyer. Kind of wish I had gone into law school at one point, though. That would have been fun. I would have been an asshole of a lawyer.
It was covered under business law.
So you
law.
Would have been a
we
lawyer.
We had that class.
We did?
I took business law. I could have sworn you were in it. Contract law discussing two people go into the Thunderdome, only one comes out. Why is that not an enforceable contract?
Oh, that's
the
right. I got an A in that class. I got an A in that class, too. I don't remember it, but I'm pretty sure I got an A.
Yeah, a contract can't have you do something that's illegal. Yeah. So disputes can't be settled in Thunderdome.
I remember that test. That was awesome. Yeah, he had some great questions on that test. Shit. Yeah, but I don't know if the fifth applies in civil lawsuits or not. But, I mean, if the state is the one prosecuting you, I would assume the constitutional amendments still apply. Constitutional protections still apply. But,
Oh, yeah, in the civil suit against OJ, they couldn't force him to say, "Did you kill Nicole? We all know you did it. I just want to hear you say it on the stand, big brother."
Come on, Mr. Juice, let's just hear it once. Anyways,
come on, Mr. Juice. Everyone wanted to strangle a white bitch. Tell me, did you do it?
Wow. And there we went. I don't know where we were at the original story. right. So, anyways, this could be very interesting if you can actually hold a company legally liable for failing to take adequate precautions to protect their data. I think that's interesting. Because I kind of like it on one hand because it's going to encourage better behavior out of these companies. But on the other hand, you could get very big brother with that very quickly.
I don't know. It's yeah. Big brother on a company whose entire job is we're taking data of people that did not give it to us and then selling that to banks.
Yeah.
Because you didn't give your information to Equifax. You gave your information to Chase. Chase could have done manual underwriting and decide whether or not to give you a loan. But instead of actually doing the work bankers used to do, they asked Equifax, did Bob pay off his recent debts? What debts did Bob have? Here's Bob's information to look into that.
By the
you
way,
didn't
we've connected
go into business with any of those people.
By the way, we've connected Bob's Facebook account. Here he is drunk on the weekend. Here he is hitting on a transsexual he doesn't know is a transsexual.
Oh, he's going to get past the cotton ceiling on this one.
Anyways, yeah, people.
Not that I hate these companies and want them to go to hell, but I can see holding them to a higher standard.
Well, I mean, because you could apply the same thing to like Microsoft, Facebook, and Google, right? Because they're collecting all this information.
But on a lot of those, you chose to do business with Facebook.
Yeah.
I'm choosing to do business with Microsoft. I might not like all the things you're choosing to do to my PC when I install their operating system, but I could have gotten a copy of Linux. I could have stuck OS X on it. I could have done other things. I'm choosing this. I take upon all the risks for choosing it. You don't choose to do business with Equifax. You don't actually do business with Equifax.
We should.
The reason they have your info is a bank gave it to them.
Yeah. We should try hackintoshing that build you have, Madman. That'd be interesting. Yeah, I saw an article on Hackintosh and Ryzen builds the other day, and apparently it's not that big of a deal. So, Something to think about. Huh. Although Apple's not just as bad as Microsoft, at least on the iOS side, as far as collecting data. So, speaking of Microsoft, next article is from The Verge. The Supreme Court fight over Microsoft's foreign data servers is over. The newly passed Cloud Act ends the USU versus Microsoft before a decision is reached. The much-anticipated Supreme Court case, U.S. versus Microsoft, which could have decided the extent of American jurisdiction over foreign servers, is now, for all intents and purposes, dead. On March 30th, the Department of Justice moved to drop the lawsuit as moot, and today Microsoft filed to agree with the motion. While the Supreme Court has yet to officially drop the case, it's a foregone conclusion that they will. Both the government and Microsoft agree that the newly passed Cloud Act renders the lawsuit meaningless. In U.S. versus Microsoft, federal law enforcement clashed with Microsoft over the validity of a stored Communication Act warrant for data stored in a server in Dublin. The Cloud Act creates a new clear procedure for procuring legal record or legal orders for data in these kinds of cross-border situations. And last week's motion to vacate, DOJ disclosed that it had produced a new warrant under the Cloud Act. Even though the crime is from like 2014, they just passed a law today. Well, not today, but you know what I mean. So it's like, okay, new law. And although the new law is not without controversy, Microsoft supported the Cloud Act while it was still a bill, and again took the opportunity to praise it in its Supreme Court filing, calling it a nuanced legislative scheme that creates a modern legal framework for law enforcement access to data across borders. In other words, Microsoft is happy that there's a set of rules, because once there's a set of rules, you can find the loopholes in those rules and set it all up. But the whole Ireland drug dealer, where Microsoft was fighting them, saying you can't force us to disclose information on servers that are not within the jurisdiction of the United States. Yeah, well, they passed a law saying it's now within the jurisdiction of the United States, and here's the framework. So,
that is only in companies that are incorporated in the U.S.
True. I was going to say, because it's still one of those things where it's like, how does that really work? Because, like Zuckerberg being summoned before Parliament, what do they do if he says no? They can't have him arrested or forcibly brought before Parliament. Like if a British citizen says no to a parliamentary summon, I'm pretty sure the British police are going to show up and drag his ass to Parliament.
But what they do is they issue a warrant for his arrest, and any nation that wants to aid in that warrant will do so. So let's say Britain issues a warrant, and then Zuckerberg goes to Canada. That kind of in the same legal framework as Britain. Guess who might get brown bagged and sent to England?
That'd be funny. Zuckerberg kidnapped and sent to England.
Hop in the border for some French fries and gravy. End up on a plane to England.
That would be kind of funny. Suave, does your country have a history of kidnapping people for Britain?
Not that I'm aware of, but I'm sure it's happened.
Hey, they have a history of kicking ass for Britain. Ever hear of the War of 1812?
Yeah, but that was just Britain kicking ass for Britain.
Oh, yeah, I guess technically we were still British at the time, but the soldiers came from Canada, damn it.
It's true.
I want to give you some credit here. Canadians can be badass. They're just so friendly, everyone forgot about it.
They're the nice badasses. They apologize to you the entire time they're kicking your ass. Yeah, I'm really sorry I have to do this. You know, whack. You're the one being a cunt, though.
South, you wankers.
You know, if you weren't being such a cunt, we wouldn't have to do it. Sorry about that. Whack. You know. I mean, I'll be honest. You know, as tall as Suave is, I don't want to get in a fight with him. He's a nice guy, but I don't want to try to kick his ass. He's a big guy.
But yeah, the problem with him disobeying Parliament is if he leaves the country, and not even leaves the country, the U.S. has an extradition treaty with England. Depending on what they're asking, we might ship him over there ourselves.
That'd be fun to do just to watch. I could see Trump doing that just for the, you know, just for the shits and giggles. Just like, yeah, fuck, let's do it. Let's arrest Zuckerberg and send him to Parliament.
Yeah. Kind of, if the country has a permanent seat on the UN Security Council, You want to question how much you want to piss him off.
So like I said, I can see Trump doing it just because he thinks it's funny.
Now, Zuckerberg does have a bit of an advantage in that the U.S. is the most loathed country to try to get a citizen from. Well, one of the most loathed. I think Israel tops us out, but it's hard to extradite one of us. But it still happens.
Oh, like I said, I could see our current commander-in-chief doing it for just because he thinks it's funny. So.
Oh, no, it's a negotiating tactic. Facebook will become a lot more amenable after we send him to a foreign government for questioning.
So the next article is from CNET, and Madman sent me this. And I forgot to post the link. Hang on. Link in chat. Link in other chat. There we go. Earlier today, we learned that hundreds of thousands of Delta Airlines, Sears, and Kmart online shoppers could have had their names, addresses, and credit card information stolen by hackers. Now you can add Best Buy to that list. The big box electronics retailer says it was also affected by the same breach due to its use of online customer service software from 24/7 AI during a 15-day period in which its online chat tool was infected with malware. You don't need to have used the online chat software to be affected. Delta believes that if you entered billing information into the company's desktop website between September the 26th and October 12th of 2017, there's a chance your information was compromised. Oh, back in 2017. Awesome. Cool. It's like, wait, when did I buy that hard drive off Best Buy? Fuck.
I'm good.
I think we're good. Best Buy can't or won't yet say how many of its customers were affected, but it says it believes the number is small. As best we can tell, a lot of people shop at Best Buy. A small percentage of their customers is still a lot of people. Where'd it go? As best as we can tell, only a small fraction of our overall online customer population could have been caught up in this 24/7.ai incident, whether or not they used the chat function. The statement reads from the company. It's also important to note that none of the companies have yet to confirm that any personal information was actually stolen, merely that there was an opportunity to do so. Regardless, Best Buy says it will offer free credit monitoring service to those who want them, or services to those who want them, and is assuring its customers they won't be liable for any illegal transactions. We're still wondering if more companies will be affected. A January profile of 27AI listed American Express, AT&T, Citi, eBay, Farmers Insurance, and Hilton as clients of the chat company as well. American Express confirmed to CNET that it was not affected by the breach.
Woohoo! Doesn't affect my company. Yay.
Go ahead, Swaff.
Oh, yeah, great. American Express. The nerdy kid who sits by himself at the party.
Isn't that Discover?
Should have had
Visa. Yeah, that one too.
And so, anyways. All right, and the last story I have for tonight is just funny. It's from Gizmodo. Post this. Teen monitoring apps don't work and just make teens hate their parents, study finds.
I could agree with that.
I just like, you know, claiming the obvious. So-called parental control apps on smartphones might suck at actually protecting kids from iffy stuff on the internet, new preliminary research from the University of Central Florida suggests, and unsurprisingly, they also seem to drive a wedge between teens and parents. Because, you know, there's not enough of that already, right?
You're coming out and saying, kid, I don't trust you, doesn't really wedge anything, does it?
No, not at all. Researchers first surveyed over 200 pairs of parents and teens, aged 13 to 17, online. About half of the parents said they had at least sometimes used these apps, which can block certain websites, limit screen time, and track children's online activity. They found that parents who relied on these apps were more than likely to be stricter and authoritarian, meaning they're often demanding and rarely willing to listen to their kids or meet them halfway. That's a bit of a... Now, wait a minute. More likely to be stricter and authoritarian, meaning they're more demanding. How are they determining that exact... I mean, that's a very... That's a very specific statement. They're more likely to not listen to their kids. I mean, wait a minute.
Yeah. My parents listened to me. They then told me what I can and can't do, and I listened.
But they
also explained why I can and can't do it.
But they would at least hear you out when you tried to make up some bullshit to explain it, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they let me say anything. My dad's... one of my dad's favorite saying is, I'm going to give you all the rope you need to hang yourself. Keep talking, boy. Keep talking.
But seemingly counterintuitively, the teens whose parents reported having these apps were also more likely to report being exposed to unwanted explicit content, online harassment, and other problems with kids. The takeaway here is that parents should not treat parental control apps as a magic bullet to keep their teens safe online. Senior author Pamela... Oh, dear God, that's a Jewish name. Wininskowski? Wininewski. Wininski?
Yep, she knows what a Kofilska fish is.
I don't know how to say that. An assistant professor of engineering and computer science at UFC told Gizmodo via email. Building on their initial findings, the researchers then looked at 736 online reviews. 700? That's a very specific number. 736 online reviews left by parents and kids ages 8 to 19 of 37 parental control apps available on Google Play. The parents were generally rosy about the apps, but two-thirds of the kids gave them one-star reviews, and they also often confessed the apps negatively impacted their relationship with their parents. This app will cause trust issues with your kid. Ever since my dad installed this app, he and I have grown farther apart. If he doesn't trust me enough to use my phone, why should I trust him? Read a one-star review of the Secure Team Parental Control app in 2015. Yep, that's right, people. Don't install this app. It'll make your father hate you. Both studies, which haven't been published in a peer-reviewed journal, are set to be presented later this month at the Association for Computing Machinery Conference on Human Factors in Computing Systems, held in Montreal, Canada. That's a hell of a name for a conference. Like, that's two lines of that paragraph is the name of that conference in Canada. Wininski said that the research paper was peer-reviewed prior to its acceptance to the conference. One of the drawbacks of the studies, however, is they can't tell us exactly why these apps are linked to more online risks. Well, that's easy. They're linked to more... It's the same reason why when people have amazing amounts of safety equipment in their cars, they drive like maniacs. They think they're not going to be hurt because it's like, oh, if I get hurt, the airbags will... You know, if I get in a wreck, the airbags will save my life.
Well...
Yeah. Or if you're learning to sword fight and you've got all the armor on, you're going to be nuts because you expect that armor to protect you. But if you're learning to sword fight and it's just you and the long sword and your opponent also has the long sword and you're both learning and you both don't actually want to kill each other, you're going to be really careful about where you swing that sword because you want to make sure you don't kill your friend. So I'm pretty sure this is the, oh, I can do whatever I want because the software will block anything that'll get me in trouble. Oh, look at that. Those are boobs. I mean, it's possible that the teens who are experiencing online risks have parents who are more likely to use parental control apps. However, based on the parental reports and our own prior research, parents are often unaware of the online risks their teens are experiencing, and this did not statistically explain why they chose to use parental control apps, Wininski said. Another possible explanation is teens are not getting the support they need from their parents to help them navigate both offline peer problems and online risk experiences. There's a phrase, online risk experiences. Can I sell that? Can I be a director of online risk experiences? Because that's, my God, is that a term? The use of parental control apps, as opposed to more engaged parenting styles, might be systematic of this lack of engaged parental involvement. Rather than turning to automated safety nets, the authors say parents should become more involved with their kids' lives, which includes both directly supervising what they're seeing on the internet and having open conversations about the dangers of online activities. Yeah, don't bet all of your college money on poker stars, kids. at the same time, they should also trust their children's own judgment in managing these risks. My parents never really, you know, cared what I did on the computer. So, of course, they may not have known what all was out there, but, I mean, they never gave a shit.
Yeah. So, you know, I honestly, I think instead of having to go and be sneaky and like spy on your kids, if you have a good relationship with them and they can trust that they can tell you shit, then you're probably going to be okay. As long as you're not one of those parents who deceives themselves that their parent, that their kids actually talk to them about stuff.
Well, I mean, okay, I'm not a parent, like, right? So I can only guess at this, but I would figure you just sit down there with the kid when they start getting online and be like, look, there's some weird crap out there. You know, just ask.
Yeah, you know, like, and it's not, it not, it's not just telling them that they can ask. You have to show them that they can ask.
Yeah, not,
you know, like, if you start
not
like,
lose their
punishing
shit
them
when they say,
like,
oh, look, I saw boobs.
Yeah. Yeah, you're like, oh, you're grounded. Well, okay, well, that just teaches them never to tell you stuff.
It's like, well, what site were you on? Oh, you were on Motherless? Yeah, you're grounded. But not because you were looking at boobs, but because you were on Motherless. Now we have to get hit the computer with a flamethrower.
Those parts can't be salvaged, son. Similarly with E-Fuck, don't go there.
I like what Psychro said in the chat room. Basically, it's 2018. Your kid is going to watch porn if they want to. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And you know for a fact that, you know, they're going to be, like, hanging out in their buddy's room, and they're going to be looking up the most twisted, fucked up shit that they can possibly imagine.
Which, given that they're,
like, teenage boys,
they're teenagers, it's not going to be as fucked up as you think it is.
Oh, they're going to have a Salad Fingers marathon. What are you talking about? It's still weird and creepy.
True.
Oh, fuck.
Let's, so, yeah, I think we all basically agree that, you know, have you ever thought about sitting down with your kids and hitting them? No, wait, that's not the right speech. talking to them. Yeah, that's the word, talking to them.
Yes, talk to your kids, people.
And hit them. No, wait.
A little.
Only when they're not listening. Or, you know, you want to film them crying and put it on YouTube. No, wait, that's bad advice again. Damn it. Okay, well, I'm obviously not the right person to talk to about children. So, I mean, I did make a 3D printed hand for one, but, you know, other than that, that's about my experience with kids. So,
yeah, but were you responsible for him losing the one you were replacing? Because this isn't an act of charity. It's an act of penance.
Sorry.
Emergency. Emergency.
That's it, man.
Okay. No. But I may have pointed and laughed. No, I'm kidding. Anyways. Actually, no, for anybody who is into 3D printing, the Raptor-enabled hands are not that hard to print. Getting them wired up right so they work correctly, it's a bit of a trick to that, because the one I tried to tie the strings onto, I didn't have it tight enough, so it was kind of loose. But
what anyways. Was the print time on that?
Well, it took me about a week, but that wasn't continuously printing. That was just in the evenings.
Okay.
So the two big pieces I let go overnight, and let's see, so those were both about 12 hours. The pin sets were about three. The fingers were probably about 4 hours for each section. There were three prints for all of those. Probably about 48 hours total.
Okay.
So, it wasn't too bad. Ate up a lot of plastic, though. Way more than I was expecting it to. So, anyways.
You're also building it to be beat around a bit.
Oh, yeah, no, the fingers are made out of carbon fiber. I mean, you know. This kid could attach claws to the thing and probably be fine. Just hot glue some razor blades on there. It's like doing Nerf gun modifications where you put razor blades in the darts, right?
We use nails.
Both of you are dicks.
Everybody knew they had nails in them.
No, because that makes it better when you get shot in the face.
To be fair, we did stop using the nails when somebody did get shot in the face.
Oh, I have the perfect sound effect for this.
Oh, fuck.
Oh, fuck.
Anyways. All right, let's move on to this. All right, got two things for you tonight in Digital Dojo. Both are fairly quick. The first is part of the USB Armory package, which that's a project for a specific piece of hardware. But the write-up is actually really good on using the gEther module in Linux, which if you have the right kind of hardware, the gEther module allows you to pretend to be a USB Ethernet card. And in my case, the right hardware is a Raspberry Zero. So when you're setting up the gEther module, this is a nice write-up of setting up connection sharing, how to get the firewall working, IP addressing, all this stuff. And so I have actually built a pocket file server because we've been blocking USB drives at work. So instead, I have a Raspberry Zero with a 128 gig SD card in it that pretends to be a network card and then runs a Samba server. So it's the world's most complicated flash drive, but it works even though all of our security software says you're not allowed to write to USB flash drives. Proof of concept, I'm not actually stealing data from my job, I promise, but it was still hilarious to figure out what it took to do it. And it was, you know, about a $10 Raspberry Zero, a USB header, couple hours of my time and 128 gig SD card, so I probably got $60 in the thing.
Please tell me you wrote a white paper and actually demonstrated this just to show you could.
I didn't write the white paper, but I've totally shown it off.
No matter what I do to secure the network, I know how to break it.
Yeah. Also showed how to use virtual machines to get around those controls. So, I mean, you know, it's not a big deal. It just wants to make people aware that it's not perfect. It's just obnoxious enough to get the users to behave. Most end users are not going to figure out how to set up a Raspberry Pi pocket file server. So, unless, of course, I wrote up instructions and made them easy to find on the internet. But,
wow, what's this link?
Damn it!
Don't worry, we don't work together. I won't take advantage of this.
And then the last thing I have is for system administrators, which is a little freebie utility from Networks, which monitors Active Directory for changes and gives you a report every 24 hours of what changed. So if you have administrative access to Active Directory, this is actually a really cool tool because you can figure out what groups were made, what groups were deleted, who moved what. And it's just nice for monitoring for changes and trying to figure out what the fuck just happened and why something broke. Also, if you're, you know, noticing high-level people getting their accounts turned off, and you're like, oh, somebody got walked out the door and they just haven't announced it yet. That's a great way of tracking that shit down, too. I'm guessing nobody else on this channel has administrative access to Active Directory where they work. Okay, so this is a way of watching when people's computer accounts get turned off so you can see when somebody got fired. As well, if you're an actual sysadmin, it's a really useful tool.
Yeah, that actually requires that your system administrator does stuff like that. I quit my job there, came back 2 years later, still same employee ID, same computer username and login.
They never disabled your account?
No.
You could have had so much fun when you weren't technically working there.
They just don't even think about that sort of stuff.
I wonder how common that is.
Way more than you would like. Unfortunately, it is way more common than it should be.
Like, we fired him. We just forgot to take all of his keys.
Dude, it fucking happens. Like, you know, you go use an old login and it still fucking works. It's like, that's not right. but it happens. So
yeah,
you know, you might go check your old your logins from your previous job. I caught myself. I didn't say where you worked. I mean, nobody needs to know that you worked at, you know. Damn it.
No, I know something even worse than that. One of the previous jobs I had for that previous company, I had generic credentials for facilities I wasn't normally in. And these credentials work across facility.
Dude, you got credentials to the Hustler Store database?
Yes. And the way they work is whenever that group of people show up at that facility, these generic credentials are always on. It's just what they have access to may change.
We might have some fun next time we decide to drive up to one of the Hustler stores.
Yeah. Could potentially log in and, depending on what the last thing that we're doing, really mess with their system. Or I just might have a blank menu.
It's like, what are you doing? We're changing the price of dildos. It'll be hilarious. Anyways, that's all I've really terrible. Got. What?
Terrible. That's a terrible thing to do. Or to have exist in a facility or company.
Anyway. Yeah. And apparently I got kicked out of the damned IRC again. I wish Freedom would make up its mind. Anyways, that's all I've really got for tonight. I'd read the IRC list, but I've gotten kicked out of the damn thing again, so I don't remember who all was in there. I know Psychros was in there. We saw Trinary a bit shortly. I think I saw Iron Angel in there as well, but I don't think he had said anything. Who else was in there? I don't know. It's gone. I was just kind of scrolling back up to the list of who said what. And anyways, so Madman, closing thoughts.
I really hope Equifax gets nailed to the wall by New Jersey, and I didn't think I would say anything nice about a Democrat prosecutor, but I've also been just thinking about the one in my state. But if that chick runs for national office, I may vote for her.
Nice. Suave, what do you have in future? I mean, yeah, right. Forgot. Don't want to fight you. What do you have in closing thoughts?
Change your passwords.
Yes, that's good advice. All right. That is all. And with that, I think we're going to play the Pac-Man sound and call it a night.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
I have testicular cancer.
No, 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 sorry.